I'm Jim Benson, co-author with Scott Skelton of Rod Serling's Night Gallery, an after-hours tour. Whisper aired on May 13, 1973, and in essence, marks the third start of Night Gallery's third season. The confusing and unpredictable scheduling of the now-marooned NBC series caused the Minneapolis Star newspaper to remark, "There's at least one series a network can kick at, stomp on, and even cancel that manages to die hard." Night Gallery will replace NBC's Escape series, which premiered on February 11th and hasn't been seen since. It's a funny way to cancel a series and also to try to get a new one on the road. Writer David Raphael had met Rod Serling prior to the premiere of Whisper, as Raphael recalled in the following clip.
I met him once at a, I think it was an Israeli nightclub in L.A. For some reason, he knew my stuff. Maybe it was the play that he knew that was done off-Broadway. He was very, very nice to me, and I think he also liked the fact that I was from upstate New York and he was from Ithaca.
One of Tom Wright's finest paintings displayed during Night Gallery's three seasons, the artist was quite pleased with the final product as well, as Mr. Wright describes.
This painting's The Whisper. This painting presents the spiritual situation in the story, trying to pull together all the images, the lonely figure in the graveyard, the gentle face looking down on all, and the color palette conveys everything I wanted in this painting. I like the painting and it works.
Whisper is an early example of Sally Field tackling a much more complex role than what she was usually offered up until this point in her career. In some ways, the character of Irene can be seen as a dry run for Field's remarkable Emmy Award-winning performance in the landmark 1976 telefeature Sybil, another role in which she dealt with multiple personalities, as director Jeannot's work recalls.
She was delightful, and I felt she did the multiple personalities very well. I don't know if you would call it that. I mean, the ghostly presence, or whatever you want to call it, she did it extraordinarily well. When I look back, there is no doubt that it was like training ground for Sybil.
At the time, Sally Field was one of the most popular actors in television, having starred in the very popular 1960s ABC sitcoms Gidget and the Flying Nun. After three seasons of playing a flying nun, Sally Field was looking to spread her artistic wings, which is why this role on Night Gallery attracted the young actress, as Sally Field recalls.
Well, the attraction number one is it wasn't The Flying Nun. That was number one. I was so recently out of that. And it was fairly dramatic. Night Gallery was well-regarded. I mean, my friend Steven Spielberg started it, and it's, you know, he and I sometimes laugh and talk about it, a bizarre, you know, how many times we missed actually meeting each other. And it was Dean Stockwell.
When directors Guillermo del Toro and Jeannot's work were discussing Night Gallery on my radio program, TV Time Machine, Mr. del Toro expressed his admiration to Mr. Zwork on how he handled the inherent challenges of interior storytelling in Whisper, as you'll hear in this clip.
What I find fascinating about that episode is that normally it's more common to approach a difficult subject in a terse narrative way, and the opposite, a simple subject in a complex narrative way. And you approach a complex subject, a complex premise, in a complex way. You know, it really, there is very little room for error, if you would. And I think you pull it off. It's a very disquieting episode.
On the other side of the camera, director Jeannot's work followed the script's instructions to the letter in having Sally Field and co-star Dean Stockwell speak directly into the camera while conveying a private thought. For practical reasons and to conform to NBC's edict to Americanize Night Gallery for the third season, the location of Martin Waddell's short story was changed from England to the American South, creating a bit of confusion, as screenwriter David Raphael explained.
Some of the writing I was, I must say, I was not ashamed of, and I really hate my stuff. But I thought this held up pretty well. It still looked like England to me. I don't mean physically. It had an English feeling to it. I mean, I didn't know there were such places in castle-looking places, and I was sort of shocked with that mailbox, that rural mailbox.
The actors being used as a third-person narrator has left many a viewer ambivalent about this episode, including director Jeannot's work, as you'll hear in this clip.
The subjective, it was not immediately apparent as a style. I just carried it to its extreme, and it's a little bit awkward at the beginning for the actors. But after a while, if it becomes part of the style, then everybody goes along with it. It's not an easy thing to do for the actors.
David Raphael was frequently critical of his own work and was not a fan of the narrative device that he used, nor the ambiguity of the story, as the writer observed.
I don't know whether it was my idea or the original story to have Dean Stockwell talk to the camera. It was confusing at the beginning, but I thought it was an interesting idea. I keep thinking people are going to understand a lot of stuff that they can't understand. That whole thing of his talking to the camera and then... And her voice is, you don't know, you know, you can get really lost. And it's not just because it's a French movie. It's not a French movie. And it's just unclear, that's all. Colors
and changes. Despite the fact that the story location for Whisper had been moved from England to the American South, producer Jack Laird asked his director of photography for an English look, as Jerry Finnerman recalled.
Jack came to me and he said, Jerry, I want an English sunlight look. And I said, shit, Jack, it's so blasted hot and, you know, I mean, the sun's beating straight down and nothing is overcast. He says, well, try, do something. I said, I'll do my best. So when we went to shoot that show, I piled in more filtration in the lens. I mean, I had more neutral densities. You know, the stuff did look like England.
Despite having cast off her aerodynamic cornet, Sally Field still was pigeonholed by Hollywood casting directors as a cute, perky sitcom actress and little more, which represented a tremendous challenge for an artist with much greater aspirations, as Sally Field remembers.
I was known as a situation comedy actor, and in those days, you didn't get out of that, especially women didn't get out of that. Men got out of television, you know, like Steve McQueen and James Garner and Clint Eastwood. They were doing hour-long Western shows or transitioned into film, but women didn't. Women were mostly relegated to half-hour situation comedy, and film didn't want anything to do with television actresses, at least, because they were, like, considered the poor working-class group of actors, and they were not elite enough. So for me to transition out of, I mean, literally the quintessential situation comedy shows of Gidget and the Flying Nun, I had to put my head down and just be determined that I wasn't going to not get there.
Despite its potential for geographic and narrative confusion, Whisper is among the best scripts Night Gallery ever produced. Writer David Raphael delivers an exceptional adaptation of Martin Waddell's short story. It is a haunting, tragic story that stays with the viewer long after one has seen it. 9 years after Whisper was filmed, David Raphael would once again team up with Sally Field when he was hired as the uncredited script doctor for Sidney Pollack's film Absence of Malice, as Raphael remembered.
I also thought that there was something kind of touching about her. I met her later on. I didn't even remember that she had done it. I did some work on Absence of Malice for Sidney and Kurt Ludtke's movie. She'd grown considerably since Night Gallery, but I thought she was kind of sweet in it and really quite good. And Dean Stockwell always comes across as very, I've met him a couple of times, he's a very bright guy.
She's at the summer house.
Who is?
Please hurry!
Originally, Whisper was a non-starter due to the story's England location. However, associate producer Bert Astor suggested a compromise that producer Jack Laird ultimately considered, made easier by NBC's insistence to Americanize Night Gallery, as Bert Astor recalled.
We had a script we couldn't make because it took place in English. It was ancestor worship. I said, we can't do it beyond a half hour because we don't have the money to go off the lot. I said, but what we can do is change it and make it a southern story because we have a mansion on the lot. And he said, oh, no. About 4 weeks later, he changed it, and we did it. The thing that was originally English. And I talked him into the change because we didn't have the money to go off the lot. They worship ancestors in the South, too. Yeah.
Having scored a very effective performance in the second season Night Gallery episode, Deliveries in the Rear, Kent Smith was cast as the old-time country Dr. Kennaway in Whisper. Unfortunately, Kent Smith must have been off his game during the filming of Whisper because the veteran actor inexplicably decided to play his character in an overbroad foghorn-leghorn style of Southern manners, in stark contrast to Dean Stockwell's understated performance. Kent Smith had a distinguished 40-year career in Hollywood, appearing in nearly 140 productions. Science fiction and horror fans are familiar with Smith's performances in the classic 1942 film Cat People and a regular role in the 1960s ABC TV series The Invaders. Because of the show's freewheeling and sometimes chaotic nature, it wasn't unusual for Night Gallery to experience production issues. However, in the case of Whisper, the production crew faced an unprecedented and highly sensitive situation, as Sally Field recalls.
I was breastfeeding at the time, and in those days, that was not cool. That was not acceptable. It was not supported. And my son, my little baby, was with me instead of, you know, leaving my baby at home with maybe my mother and trying to figure out how she feeds him when I was breastfeeding, and they... You know, all of this, the new technology of freezing breast milk and all, it just didn't exist then. It was really frowned on. I can't tell you how unhappy they were. That's what I remember most about doing this, is how hard it was to do that.
As a child actor, Dean Stockwell appeared in such classic films as Anchors Away, Gentleman's Agreement, and The Boy with the Green Hair. But those early years were not pleasant ones for the young actor, as Dean Stockwell remembered.
At that time, I didn't like it because I resented being somebody else's property. That was a pressure situation. And it came clear to me very, you know, as soon as I said at one point, Mom, do I really have to do this? I don't want to do this. We have to. We have no choice. We are under contract. Therefore, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer becomes this evil thing to me because they are making me do this. Because if it had been up to me, I would have been out of it by the time I was 10.
But it wasn't until the 1980s that Dean Stockwell really hit his stride, appearing in the films Blue Velvet, Tucker, the Man in His Dream, and an Academy Award-nominated performance as Tony the Tiger Russo in the 1988 movie Married to the Mob. Dean Stockwell also hit it big on television, co-starring in the NBC TV series JAG, the 2004 version of Battlestar Galactica, and his most famous TV role as Al in the classic science fiction TV series Quantum Leap, which ran on NBC from 1989 to 1993.
Of course I do.
In the early 1970s, Hollywood was on the cusp of significant changes. And in terms of a culture established over a six-decade period, resistant to it. Artists like Sally Field were part of a movement that would revolutionize the entertainment industry over the next 50 years in more ways than one, as Sally Field explains.
And it was also the 70s, so it was 60s, early 70s, and, you know, women and the younger culture, the baby boomers, were pushing the envelope in every way, protesting about everything. But women were beginning to say, no, we're not doing it. But they didn't. We weren't able to say it that boldly, at least I wasn't. And I wasn't in the room for those conversations. In other words, I was somewhere down the hall, but I could feel the reverberations of what the movement was doing.
Aside from his work on Absence of Malice, David Rayfield regularly teamed with director Sidney Pollack, who was good friends with both Rayfield and Jack Laird, on many of Pollack's films, including The Slender Thread, 3 Days of the Condor, and The Firm. For his own amusement, writer David Rayfield chiseled a meaningful Latin phrase onto one of the headstones that haunts Irene, Vadim Ecum. Its true significance to the author? David Rayfield reveals that the true meaning of Vadim Ecum was his daily mouthwash.
I always thought of it as come with me. Take me with you is more poignant, I think. It's kind of good. I liked it. Oh, yeah, it's available. Very concentrated mouthwash. I use it, and you put a couple of drops in water, and you have a whole glass full of mouthwash if that's what you want. It's also good for any, it's an antiseptic is what it is, but terrifically concentrated and extremely bleed peppermint. And if you don't rinse out your mouth, it'll kill you in there. It'll really burn your tongue.
With Rod Serling writing fewer scripts for Night Gallery during its third season, producer Jack Laird turned to two writer friends he knew, trusted, and could depend on, David Rayfield and Jack Gus. Rayfield wrote both Whisper and She'll Be Company for You, and Jack Gus wrote the penultimate Night Gallery episode, The Doll of Death. Jack Laird had worked with the two men on his short-lived 1963 ABC TV series Channing, as David Rayfield recalled.
Yeah, I had a play called PS-193, and Bob Rafelson, who was associated with Channing at the very beginning, read it and liked it and wanted to make it one of the Channing, because it took place on a campus. And then Bob Rafelson either was fired or quit, and so I found myself working with Jack Laird.
Like many who knew Jack Laird, the producer's eccentricities were among the first things that stand out in memory, as David Rayfield remembered.
He was talented in a certain way, and he did write, and an energetic guy. He was allowed little liberties in those days, like he didn't have to wear a tie on the Universal lot. I think things have eased up considerably. He was allowed to be more flamboyant, a little rebellious. And I thought he was just a swell guy. I went back to television to do those things because Jack was a nice guy from before. I did those two. And the stories, I never would have come up with anything like that. You know, I don't know that kind of the genre.
He's the Lord.
When producer Jack Laird cast Dean Stockwell for Whisper in June of 1972, the actor was emerging from a serious lull in his career, as Stockwell described in the following clip.
During that middle period of my career when I did these quote-unquote classics, that lasted for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Then I dropped out a little bit for a few years during the Haight-Ashbury and the Flower Children and the Love-Ins and all of that to enjoy that, and that was a great time in my life. But I didn't work during that time. Then when I came back to come act again, I couldn't get work. So I found that there was one avenue available for someone such as myself, and that was dinner theater. Dinner theater people like to have someone come in and star that they can afford. Now, that's someone who is either washed up, has been, or is in a real bad dry stretch, and that's what I was in. And I'd get an occasional television movie or something, and that was all for a long, long, long time. I'm talking 12 years.
Director of photography Jerry Finnerman was hired by Night Gallery producer Jack Laird for his expertise in using innovative lighting techniques to help create a darker, more shadowy look to the series, which is certainly evident in Whisper, as Finnerman recalled.
You know, the cross lighting, not the colors, but the cross lighting on Night Gallery. If you were honest with Jack, you know, he either liked you or he hated you. That was it. And if he hated you, you were gone. But we got along very well. I understood him. He was a very sensitive guy who he had some strange quirks about him.
Although NBC had their bureaucratic fingers in Night Gallery's third season creative pie, producer Jack Laird was still firmly in charge of other aspects of the production, and Whisper is the perfect example of that fact, as director Jeannot Zwark observes.
On Night Gallery, we took a lot of chances. Jack encouraged it in a way. There was very little time, and when you made a choice in terms of stylistic options or looks of the show, You were stuck with it because you couldn't change in midstream. So I guess we were lucky, but, you know, there was a lot of talent. You had great writers, a great producer, a great production designer, a great cameraman. It was a very team effort.
Some critics and viewers of Night Gallery were never completely satisfied with the show's faithful adaptations of classic short stories, which frequently manifested in narrative ambiguities and a lack of finality. However, acclaimed director Guillermo del Toro fully embraced that type of purity of story on Night Gallery, as the director remarks.
And that is the personality of Night Gallery, which is the ideas and the social commentary seem to be prevalent in Twilight Zone, almost like a social conscience through genre. Mm-hmm. And Night Gallery was utterly disturbing, utterly eccentric, and completely fixated in leaving a memorable sensorial feel, like disquiet. And I think there's never actually been anything like it on TV or in other medium.
Whisper marks the final Night Gallery that Jeannot Zwark directed. The most prolific director of the series, Zwark left a memorable mark on not only the series, but also on those who watched and appreciated his artistry, as director Guillermo del Toro personally conveyed to Jeannot Zwark on my radio program, TV Time Machine.
You directed several of my favorite episodes, including the ones I think is in the top three ever in the series, which is obviously The Caterpillar, which is perhaps the most memorable one of them all. Your style, you have a range, a very wide range. You were at the same time one of the most modern guys in the series, meaning you were very aware of what was hip and happening at the time, like in the Phantom Farmhouse, where you use very sort of hippie and pop aesthetics, and you resort to the zoom lens, which at that time was incredibly modern and not everybody knew how to use it properly and so forth. But at the same time, you do things like Little Black Bag and Caterpillar, which are very academically correct, beautifully staged. Caterpillar, I think, is gorgeous. The camera work and to me, it remains one of the few episodes in the series that really approximates film.
In 1968, while Sally Field was starring in The Flying Nun, the talented actress began studying under the tutelage of Lee Strasberg at the famed Actors Studio. Sally Field was able to translate what she learned at the Actors Studio to future television roles, such as the haunted young bride in Whisper, playing twin sisters whose relationship is put to the test in Marcus Welby, M.D., and her breakout role as a young woman suffering from multiple personality disorder in the acclaimed 1976 TV movie, Sybil. Only 7 years after her role on Rod Serling's Night Gallery, Sally Field won an Academy Award as Best Actress for her role in the 1979 film Norma Rae. 5 years later, Sally Field won a second Best Actress Oscar for the film Places in the Heart. Sally Field's remarkable film career continued as she starred in such films as Steel Magnolias, Mrs. Doubtfire, Forrest Gump, The Amazing Spider-Man, and Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. In all, Sally Field has won 2 Academy Awards and has been nominated 3 times. Ms. Field has also been nominated for 8 Emmy Awards, winning 3 times. Sally Field was also nominated for 2 BAFTA Awards, 11 Golden Globe Awards, winning twice, multiple Film Critics Awards, 7 Screen Actors Guild nominations and 1 win. She was a Best Actress winner in 1979 at the Cannes Film Festival, and Ms. Field was a Kennedy Center Honors recipient in 2019. Anthology television series such as Rod Serling's Night Gallery gave Sally Field the opportunity she needed when she needed it, as Sally Field recalls.
So I had to earn a living. I had two children to support. And to try to figure out how to weave through that territory, how to accept something to do to earn a living and yet not to constantly underline what the industry already thought about me. Because I had to try to at least make the image they had of me a little foggier. if not erase it entirely. You know, there were these roles, there were a few of them, not a ton, there were a few of them that I thought, well, okay, I can do this. And I could try to explore some of the things that I was working on with at the studio. And this was one of those.